Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you from the Rocky Mountain town of Crested Butte, Colorado. I'm your host, Mark Troutman, CFP. This educational, personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. Every morning after I wake up, I come into the kitchen, I get some food out for the dog, I make my coffee, I do a little stretching, and then I sit down with my coffee and I read the Wall Street Journal. I've been doing this for the past number of decades, and I really get a lot of enjoyment out of reading the articles in that paper. And of course, I do it online these days. But right before the cruise, there was an article that I thought was interesting, and I earmarked it, and I thought we would discuss it in this episode. And the title of the article is Retiring in the Next 5 Years, Avoid These Financial Mistakes. So, of course, being a retiree myself and talking to a lot of people who are on the edge of retirement or certainly planning on retirement in the future, I thought this was an interesting article. And of course, when there's these listicles, I like to go through them and see if they make sense. So I would like to talk about the article and I'm going to add some of my comments. So the subtitle of the article is The Last Few Years Before Retirement Can Make or Break What Comes Next. And this was written by Cheryl Winokur Monk, published on April 12th of 2024. I will post a link to this article in the show notes. Hopefully it won't be behind a paywall. I will try to see if I can get the link unlocked, and it looks like I think I can do that. So hopefully that will be the case. If not, you certainly could Google it and see if you could get access to the article without the paywall. And so it starts off, it's so close you can almost feel it, retirement. You just need about 5 more years and you are there. So here's some advice. Don't blow it. Financial mistakes in the few years before retirement can quickly and permanently derail your plans. With that in mind, here are 6 common mistakes to avoid. Number 1, failing to maximize retirement contributions. And she continues, during their peak earnings years, people should try to maximize the employee contribution, including the catch-up contribution available to people age 50 and above, says Julie Back, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor in the Seattle office of New York-based WealthSpire Advisors. For 2024, this allows them to contribute a total of $30,500. If you've been making automatic contributions from your paycheck, be sure you aren't falling short of the limit if you can afford to contribute the full amount, she says. And that's all that is said about item number 1. And so my comments are, well, it's great if you can do that. That is a significant amount of money. Just so everyone is aware, the standard contribution limit to a 401k is $23,000. And if you are age 50 or older, you can contribute an additional $7,500 per year. And that's where the $30,500 come from. Now, it's very possible if you're of kind of traditional retirement age that you are earning probably one of your peak earnings years in those 5 years leading up to retirement. And if you can maximize your contributions, of course, that makes a lot of sense. And here's another reason to consider doing that, especially if you're close to standard retirement age where you will be age 59 and a half, where you won't have any early withdrawal penalties during your retirement, or let's say even if you retired 55, it won't be that far away. If you're retiring very early, having access to that account can be somewhat of a challenge. However, there is a workaround, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. And I've talked about it on previous episodes. So here's the thing. So let's say you are in those last years of employment, you're in a very high tax bracket. Yeah, if you can defer those contributions at that marginal tax rate, and maybe you're in the 24 or even 32% tax bracket, let's say, and you get the tax deduction at that tax rate. And then later during retirement, when your income has either gone away or reduced substantially, then you could, through either distributions, pay tax on it at a lower rate, or potentially, and here's the workaround, do a Roth conversion, convert some of those standard 401k accounts or what might be in a traditional IRA. If you were to roll it out into your IRA, you could do a Roth IRA conversion, and then you could have full access to it if you're already over age 59 and a half, or you would have to wait 5 years after that conversion to access it prior to age 59 and a half. So yes, I agree with number one, failing to maximize retirement contributions, I don't think is going to blow your retirement, but it certainly can be beneficial. And then we move to number two. Number two on the list is not analyzing Social Security options. And the article continues, the earliest age anyone can take Social Security is age 62, but full retirement age could be anywhere from 65 to 67, depending on your birthday. For most people, it's 67 now. However, waiting a few years to take benefits until age 70 can often be financially prudent, Back says. Back's own mother began taking Social Security benefits at age 62 without first running it by her daughter and permanently reduced her benefit. She was one of the people who had it in her mind that she'd been paying into her whole life and she was just going to start taking it. It was a gut punch when she told me, Back says. There can be instances where it makes sense for an individual to start collecting benefits sooner rather than later, the article continues, but delaying benefits can be especially important because people are living longer. Clients don't think they are going to live into their 90s, but they could, so it's important to plan for that, Back says. Delaying Social Security may allow you to have more resources down the road to cover long-term care or other needs that might come up, or lifestyle choices like travel, she says. I agree with this. I think not enough people really do a good analysis of determining when it's best for them to take Social Security, and especially claiming strategies for couples. So if you claim at age 62, which is the earliest age possible, versus your full retirement age, which is, like I said, 67 for most people, your benefit relative to your full retirement age benefit gets reduced by up to 30%, and it's based on how early you take it. But if you were to take it all the way at 62 versus your full retirement age, if it was 67, that would be a drop of 30% for your benefit permanently. And if you delayed age 70, which is beyond the full retirement age for most people of 67, the delayed retirement credit increases by 8% per year for a total benefit at age 70 of as much as 24% higher than your full retirement age benefit at age 67. So if you compare the age 70 benefit to the age 62 benefit, the difference is 77%. So if you claimed at 62 versus claiming at 70, your benefit would be 77% higher if you had waited until age 70. Now, there's no benefit in delaying beyond age 70 because there are no further delayed credits beyond that. Now, the other thing, there is a do-over option. And so if, for instance, I think the lady's name was Back, if she were to have talked to her mother within 12 months of her initial claiming, you can reverse that decision, but you have to do it within the first 12 months of your initial claim, and it's only a one-time option. And you have to pay back all of the benefits that you receive, so that can be very challenging for people, obviously. But that is an option that is available. And I view Social Security as longevity insurance, not as this kind of break-even calculation that some people will do. They say, oh, I want to take my benefits early, I'm going to invest it, and I'm going to be ahead if I die at some early age, for example. I don't view it that way. I view it as the biggest risk that I want to try to solve for is what if I live a long time? Social Security benefits receive an inflation adjustment annually. That's not something you could get in a pension these days, or if you were to buy an annuity, like a single premium annuity, you can purchase a stated annual increase, but not a full inflation increase. Social Security is the only kind of, quote, annuity that does that. And like I said, the biggest risk a retiree faces is living a very long life and outliving your resources. So delaying until age 70 to get the largest possible benefit with those annual inflation adjustments is probably one of the best ways to mitigate running out of money later in life. I mean, that's certainly the way that you can maximize your Social Security benefit. And to me, that's more important than solving for some break-even calculation. If I die early, oh well, I'm dead. The benefits aren't going to matter at that point, but they will matter if you're 92 or 93 and you claimed at age 62 and wish you had some more money. So I view it as longevity insurance, and therefore my plan is to claim at my age 70 to receive the highest possible amount. I have a unique situation in that I will be able to claim a survivor benefit on my wife's record, and those benefits you can claim as early as age 60 or age 50 if you're disabled. And in that case, I can claim on her record, it's called a survivor benefit, at age 60, receive that all the way up until I switch to my own record at age 70, and it doesn't affect the delayed retirement credits. Now, that was a strategy that some people used to use in the past as a spouse, where a spouse would claim on the other spouse's record, and then the spouse with that record would then stop receiving benefits and let their benefit grow. Now, you can't do that anymore. That was called file and suspend. That has been eliminated. But as a survivor, you can still file on your spouse's record if they passed away and then switch to your own while your own record is growing. So that's what I will be doing. All right. Number three, taking on unnecessary debt. The article says, financial advisors caution clients not to take on unnecessary debt or make overly large cash purchases as they are nearing retirement. Buying a home after retirement might not be a bad idea depending on the circumstances, but racking up large credit card debts or buying big ticket items that depreciate quickly can do a number on your finances. It continues, beware also of taking on debt that's unsustainable, such as a huge house with a large mortgage whose payments require the salary you are accustomed to. That will torpedo your retirement faster than anything, says Jamie Cox, managing partner at Harris Financial Group in Richmond, Virginia. Now, my comments on that are, I agree. Especially for items that are big ticket items that depreciate and require ongoing operating costs, things like an RV or a boat. Many people retire and they say, I'm going to buy this RV and we're going to travel the country, but maybe they are also keeping their home. That's a sizable investment in that asset. And I have owned an RV. They depreciate quite rapidly. They also cost a lot to maintain and store and so forth. The same could be said for a boat. I think many people are aware of that. So these are also things that are hard to reverse without taking a significant hit. And also, I would say taking on a new large mortgage for a larger home, or some people say when they retire, they're going to buy a second home in retirement. And along with all of those associated costs, you may not be accustomed to those costs while you are working. And certainly once that income stops and your investment portfolio or other income needs to carry that burden, that can be very taxing on a retirement. So I caution heavily against doing those. And if you do, be very careful about it, really think about it, and potentially, especially if it's like an RV or a boat, maybe consider renting it for that experience as opposed to purchasing that item and taking a big chunk out of your retirement portfolio to do that. I also would caution on the second home. A lot of people have a lot of ideas about having a second home. I've owned a second home, and I can say that they kind of can be a pain in the you know what. You have a lot more maintenance. I was traveling between our primary residence and our secondary residence to take care of it, and ultimately we decided to sell it. So be very careful. I'm a big fan of saying, you know what, if I want to go somewhere, I'm just going to rent it. I'm going to go on Airbnb. And that also means I don't have to go to the same place all the time. And I certainly don't have to take care of it. So that was number three. Number four, the article says, investing like you're still 25. And the article states, people nearing retirement sometimes forget they don't have as much time to make up for losing investment bets. Cox recalls an investor nearing retirement who bought several rental properties shortly before the 2008 housing crash. After the market crashed, he couldn't rent the properties or sell them without taking a loss, and he didn't have the cash to pay off the mortgages. He had to sell them off piecemeal over time, and he and his wife had to keep working several years longer than they had planned. Cox recommends people who are a few years from retirement avoid risky investments and instead bolster their portfolio with dividend-paying stocks and bonds. Quote, you want to invest your money in what you're going to live on to support your income, end quote, he says. Back advises clients nearing retirement to start building up their cash reserves using tax refunds, gifts, bonuses, or other extra income. She recommends retirees keep 2 years of cash on hand to cover non-discretionary expenses and protect their portfolio in the event of a market downturn. This way, you don't have to sell from the portfolio to cover your expenses, she says. And that's what the article has to say about investing like you're still 25 is a mistake. Now, my comments are, I like the idea of building a 5-year cash runway for retirement more than the 2 years that Back advised in the article. I do think that it makes sense to turn off reinvestment of dividends and capital gains, and you could start doing this well in advance of retirement, say 5 years before retirement, for example, to help build up that cash cushion without having to sell investments. You could also consider directing new contributions you make to your accounts into the cash or stable value options in a 401k plan, for example, a money market account in a traditional IRA or brokerage account, or short-term bond funds, for example. I would also take an inventory around your home or think about what your lifestyle will be in retirement and considering selling some unnecessary assets. Maybe you have an extra car, or you have motorcycles or boats you don't use anymore, or maybe that RV that you already bought is gathering dust, or anything that has some significant value as well as significant ongoing maintenance costs and depreciation, to eliminate those assets and create cash to help fund your cash runway could be very beneficial. In fact, this is what I did. We had a collector car that we weren't using very much, and I sold that as part of a way to build our cash runway. You could also potentially consider downsizing. Maybe you want to move somewhere away from your maybe higher cost of living area where you have to live in order to get to your job, and maybe you want to move somewhere else. Maybe you don't want to downsize while you're still working, but you certainly could consider doing that, and that may free up some cash as well. Or if you want to stay where you are, maybe the kids are grown and gone and out of the house and you don't need as much square footage, maybe moving to something that has lower property taxes, lower insurance, lower maintenance could help as well. Moving to number five in the article. Number five is overspending on children. The article states, not overindulging your children becomes more important the closer you get to retirement, says Robert Strauss, estate planning attorney with Weinstock Mannion in Los Angeles. While the desire to be generous with one's children is obvious and clear, the impact on a retiree's finances can be detrimental, he says. Strauss has a client who has spent so much on one of his adult children that he has to work longer as a result. He's using his salary to support himself and one of his kids. If he didn't have to support them, he could have retired already, Strauss says. Now, my opinion on this is, I agree. A lot of parents will continue to aid their children financially, even well beyond their high school and college graduations, for example. And they will continue to supplement them because of various reasons. It's very interesting in the book, The Millionaire Next Door, which I've talked about before. They term it economic outpatient care. I love that term. And the book, as well as myself, suggests you eliminate that or reduce that as quickly as possible, because not only is it detrimental to you, but it's also detrimental to your children. They get very used to that, and it makes it difficult for them to move forward on their own. So it's not just bad for you, but it could be bad for the children as well. Instead, what you could do is maybe hire a financial coach for them to help them get their finances in order or prioritize their spending. And if you don't want to do that, I feel that the book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi, I think it's a very sensational title, but it is an excellent book. He also has a podcast by the same name where he interviews couples and talks about their situation and helps them improve their finances or think about ways to improve their finances. So maybe you could give them that book. You could read it together or simultaneously and potentially discuss it as you go through the chapters. Maybe find podcasts that would resonate with your children in their situation if they're married, because those podcasts are typically either married or partnered couples. So it doesn't pertain to in singles as much, but some of the information can be beneficial to singles as well. And maybe you make that a stipulation if you plan to continue to provide some financial assistance over a period of time. However, I would say that if you do decide to continue with some financial assistance, I would suggest putting a firm end date on that financial assistance. Maybe not cut off cold turkey if it's a sum that is substantial enough that it would significantly negatively alter your children's life, let's say, but I would work to wean them off of it in hopefully relatively short order, put a firm end date on it, discuss that, and say, this is what we are going to do. And like I said, maybe reading that book or meeting with a financial coach is part of the deal. And the last one the article talks about is number 6, neglecting to plan for your desired retirement lifestyle. And the article says, many people say they want to travel or garden or spend time with their children and grandchildren during retirement, but they don't map out a solid plan for how much these activities are like to cost. This could mean that once they retire, they won't have saved enough to do what they want, or they might be unnecessarily cautious about spending money, preventing them from enjoying themselves, says Marianne Caswell, president of Park Avenue Securities in New York. Caswell has relatives who saved for retirement for many years, but were hesitant to use their savings for activities such as small trips, eating out with friends, or other social outlets. She recommends that clients make a tentative spending plan a few years before they retire so they have financial confidence to do the things they want. And that is the end of the article. In my comments about neglecting to plan for your desired retirement lifestyle are, I think it's really important to put pen to paper and really get an accurate calculation of what life in retirement will actually cost. Often you'll read articles that say you need to budget 80% of your current expenses for retirement. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I think you need to walk through your expenses that you have today, determine which ones will continue, which ones will go away, and which new ones will come into the picture. So don't assume that it's just going to be some percentage of your current spending. I think that's not accurate, and I think that could lead to some trouble. You may find that all this newfound freedom and available time may come with additional costs, especially if travel is in your future. Many, many people first reaching retirement have plans to do a lot of travel, or at least more travel than they have in the past, because they have this free time to do it. Trust me, I have spent far more on travel than I did when I was working, and however, I've budgeted for it. I would consider doing something like what I call the fun bucket. Put some money aside outside of your investment portfolio in a separate account, like a high-yield savings account, for example. Even label it fun bucket so you'll use it for the intended purpose and not stress over making portfolio withdrawals to fund your fun. I find if you try to use your portfolio to satisfy all these needs, most people in the first years of retirement are extremely hesitant because the income spigot is turned off, or at least a good portion of it has, if you haven't started Social Security, for example, or if you have a pension, it may be completely shut off. And you're extremely hesitant to start pulling from that portfolio. It's a very major mind shift to go from earning money, where money comes in every other week or monthly, however you get paid, to having to pull the money out of your portfolio. So I find pre-funding a amount in a separate account specifically identified for the purpose of enjoyment makes that so much easier, and I highly recommend it. It is something that got me over that hurdle, and other people I've talked to that have done the same have said the same thing. So I think that's very valuable. So I hope you enjoyed this article. It was kind of fun going through it and mentioning some things that I either agreed with or disagreed with. For the most part, I agreed with the article. Like I said, I will link it in the show notes. I think I will be able to do it without a paywall. Hopefully that's the case. And yeah, so that was fun. It was a new kind of way of doing the podcast. Let me know if you like it or dislike it. You can send an email to me, mark@marksmoneymind.com. And also, if you have a question for the show, I'd be happy to address that as well. And in this next segment of the show, I'm going to do just that and answer a listener question. And now for the listener question. This comes in from Darren. Hi, Mark. My wife, Jolene, and I continue to enjoy listening to your podcasts and find we either learn something new or that what we are doing is reinforced. Thanks for all the great content. Well, thank you, Darren. I really appreciate that. I'm glad that this podcast you are finding some benefit in. He continues, we have a couple of questions regarding how to plan for a pension that Jolene has from a previous corporate employer. First is, how do we decide the right timing for taking the pension, i.e. 50, 55, 60, or later? Second is how to decide whether to take a single life versus 50% survivor benefit or a lump sum if that were to be offered. Rather than asking you to run calculations on various scenarios and tell us what you would do if you were in this situation, we are interested in how to think through this ourselves. Here are a few of the specifics that might help if interested. Pension may be taken as early as age 50 or delayed until age 70. It is not inflation adjusted, though the benefit does increase nominally by delaying the start of the pension. The company has a history of offering a lump sum payout to some previous employees, though she has not yet received such an offer. We are currently both retired and drawing on savings/investments from our IRAs via 72D distributions. Sounds like somebody I know, Eric. And brokerage account with our current withdrawal rate around 4%. Starting the pension benefit would slow our withdrawals from the IRAs and brokerage accounts by a bit, but that would mean larger RMDs, which means required minimum distributions, and taxes later in life. We already have an idea what we should do, but would appreciate any additional thoughts or considerations that we may be missing. Best regards, Darren and Jolene. Well, thank you. Thank you for the time for writing in. And here's how I think about pensions. Very similar to the way I think about Social Security. It is a lifetime stream of income that will not end until one of you or both of you in the survivorship-based scenario passes away. So this is a lifetime stream of income, which, like I said earlier, is very valuable for the risk of living a very long time. So the first thing I would do is determine how much secure income do you have via Social Security for yourself and or your wife together, and then for one of you, if and when the other predeceases the other person. And is that sufficient for kind of covering your base needs? And for many people, when there is Social Security and it's a couple, frequently the Social Security covers that kind of base need while both people are alive, but may not cover the need when one person predeceases the other. So I would look at that and determine, is this pension, this lifetime stream of income, necessary? And if so, that makes the decision a lot easier to make. And you can also use that to run the calculations of, should you take the 50% survivor benefit, for example? In many cases, that 50% survival does make sense because in most cases, the expenses of one person versus a couple are going to drop, but maybe not as much as 50%. So, you know, when there's 100% survivor, that may be overkill. 75 makes sense in many cases, 50 makes sense. So I do personally, I like the survivor benefit as long as there's not a significant cost to it. And then also trying to determine whether a lump sum makes sense. Usually the actuaries that create these pensions are pretty good in estimating what the true cost is of this effective annuity that they're offering you in the form of a pension. And you're not usually going to get any great deal by taking the lump sum. Now, there is a way to figure this out. You can go to a website such as immediateannuities.com and actually price out what would it cost you to buy an annuity of like terms. So you could say, well, let's say at age 50, you put in how much would you receive per month or per year, and what would that cost in a lump sum if you were to buy it an immediate annuity on the marketplace, for example. And then you can tell whether the lump sum that you're being offered is either a good deal or a bad deal. And in many cases, it's not going to be materially different. And the bigger decision is, do you really want a pension or do you not need it and want the lump sum for other purposes? So that's how I think about the pension. It's really, how much secure income do I have? What is it covering, especially when it comes to kind of base living expenses for the rest of my life? And is there a shortfall? And if there is, a pension, if you have one, can often be a very good filler for that gap if you have one, if Social Security isn't going to cover that kind of base living cost, especially after the first person passes away. And you can kind of model it out using cash flows and assigning different inflation rates to your, you know, base life cost, for example, relative to what the inflation would be for Social Security. You may just use a 2 or 3% inflation rate for your Social Security benefit. And then also your pension may not come with an inflation adjustment. In many cases, they don't. And so in the first years, it may cover more than you need. But then as inflation is applied to your base living costs, eventually that pension and your Social Security, there may be a shortfall as a result of the pension not having an inflation adjustment. And then whether to take it at 50, 55, 60, you could run those same calculations using immediateannuities.com at those different amounts just to see if the pension being offered seems reasonable relative to what a similar annuity would cost you in the open marketplace. So you can see whether there is an economic benefit for taking it at 50, 55, or 60. But I would likely line it up more with your needs for that cash. And again, with what you said, taking money out of your IRAs and being able to avoid taking it out, that is more of a cash flow planning perspective. And using something like a retirement planner, a DIY, or a consumer-faced retirement planner program that I think is pretty good is New Retirement Planner. I think there's also Prolana out there. I will put links to those in the show notes. But those are two consumer-facing DIY financial planning software where you can model all of this, and it can help you determine what your tax situation will be, your cash flow situation will be. Or you can hire an advisor to do this for you. You could hire a planner on an hourly basis. I would hire a full fiduciary planner if you're going to go that route, a fee-only planner, probably not assets under management planner, pay them an hourly or a project-based rate. I, in fact, just did this myself. I run my own numbers, but I wanted someone else to look over my plan. And I actually hired Chris Stein and Jim Saulnier from the Retirement and IRA Show to do my plan. And it was very helpful. My numbers were fairly close to theirs, so there wasn't any major surprises. But the discussions we had about my scenario were very valuable. And it's always good to have someone else check your number. So that could be an option. You certainly can do it yourself as well. But creating a plan with more a cash flow-based approach rather than just using a stated withdrawal rate, a 4% withdrawal rate, for example, is a much better approach when it comes to true retirement planning when you're in that drawdown phase. So hopefully that answered your question. Again, I like to think of pension as a secure lifetime stream of income. And if you need it, in addition to your Social Security, that makes the decision a lot easier. And I do personally, I do like the survivor benefit option as opposed to single life. But I hope that answers your question, or at least it gives you something to think about. And certainly feel free to reach back out to me and ask any further questions, or we can have a discussion offline if that's beneficial to you. I would not be giving any advice, but I would just be helping you think how to think through this, just like you asked. And I think that's a great way to approach this. So thank you for sending in that question. And if anybody else would like to send in a question that I might address on a future episode, please send it to me, mark@marksmoneymind.com, and put podcast question in the subject line. And I will hopefully get to it on the podcast. See you next time on Mark's Money Mind. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. If you would like me to answer a question on the show, please send it to mark@marksmoneymind.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Let me know your first name, or let me know if you would like to remain anonymous, and also your state of residence if you choose. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next week on the Mark's Money Mind Show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. And now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.